Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Rod Oram. Morena, Rod, how are you today?
Morena, Rachel, very well, thank you.
Well, I'm glad that you're on the show because we've got some big ones to talk about. We're going to talk about the Prime Minister's trip to Singapore, which is pretty significant in a minute. But first, let's just touch on inflation because it's been a very hot-button topic in the media and in people's wallets as well. It's an expensive time. Can we take it right back to basics? What does inflation actually mean for people in a day-to-day sense, and why is it so talked about at the moment, Rod?
It's because prices are rising, and therefore it's harder to buy the things you want to buy, because wages wouldn't be keeping up now with the rate of inflation as it has accelerated in pretty much every country around the world.
Mm-hmm.
But this has been a very unusual period and a long one where inflation was incredibly low, and even actually deflation, i.e. prices falling. So this is the first time that we've had inflation kick up. So now in the US it's 7.7% at an annual rate. And that's the first time it's been this high since the 1980s.
Wow.
It's a big structural shift. Now, we're not as bad as that in New Zealand, but we've still got those pressures. The IMF just released last week its World Economic Outlook. It's once every 6 months outlook. And it said the conditions had worsened significantly, that's a quote, since the last forecast back 6 months ago. So, for example, since October last year, U.S. inflation's gone from 3.5% to 7.7%. The EU's not as bad. But balanced against that, and I'm still in this camp that believe that inflation is still transitory, there are factors pushing it up, whether it's war, shortage of commodities because of the war on food and oil and gas. China's struggling with COVID, and therefore it's having supply chain problems again.
Mm-hmm.
But crucially, and this applies most in the US, there is still no sign that expectations of high inflation are being embedded in people's behavior.
Right.
And also, we're seeing some factors that have been driving prices up come back. So shipping rates, for example, peaked in September last year and plateaued at that point and have been gradually coming back. We're not anywhere near out of the woods yet, but I think the rising interest rates that our central bank and others around the world are pushing through, I'm still confident that that will possibly slow the economy down, which would be good because we're struggling with inflation, but this will be transitory inflation rather than endemic, you know, systemic.
It sounds like, I mean, when you say something is like the worst in 30 years, it always sounds bad, but I think people are really starting to be able to see how it's impacting their lives. Is there anything that the government can do beyond what you've just outlined that is going to support people through this period? Because it is going to be an expensive time. It is going to be a very difficult one. What do you think are some tools that the government could be employing at the moment?
There's a very limited range of things they can do, but most importantly would be to keep up pensions and benefits of various kinds for people who have the lowest income to help them cope. Obviously, the big work is on the Reserve Bank side, and it's pushing the government to play its role on by moderating fiscal policy, i.e. not spending as much.
Mm.
So but there's actually limited action any government can do around the world. You know, you can't mandate prices or wages, and we tried that back in the 80s, and it was a complete disaster.
Yeah.
So that's the main thing. And here's another big thing that I'm very, very focused on. Back in the 80s, pre-internet and all the rest, it was price discovery, i.e. trying to find out the price of something, was really difficult.
Mm.
But with the internet, with so much shopping online and all the rest, it's fiercely competitive on prices, and people have great options for buying from far more variety of places than they had back in the 80s. And I think that that's a huge structural change in the economy that is actually going to prove to be one of the great moderators of inflation, that people have that power, thanks to their computers and the way e-commerce works these days, to make good choices about what they buy and save money in the process.
Well, let's talk about the Prime Minister in Singapore now. This is her first international trip since the start of the pandemic and the closing of the New Zealand borders. This is very significant, but why is it significant, Rod?
I think there's two parts to that. It's good that she's out and about. Whilst I'm sure she's well-briefed and keeps up with international events, there's nothing like being on the ground, so that's good. But also Singapore plays an interesting relationship with us in that back in 2019, on her previous visit to Singapore, New Zealand and Singapore agreed to the Singapore Enhanced Partnership. And there were four pillars in there around trade and people and the like. But on this trip, they've added a fifth one, which is climate and green economy.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think this is really weird because Singapore is such a laggard. In Climate Action Tracker's analysis of all countries, Singapore's commitments to climate action are very weak. They're consistent with temperatures of 4 degrees. 4 degrees. No, absolutely. They are the worst category. They are critically insufficient is the rating they get. And our economies are so different. So we're 85% renewable electricity. Singapore is 95% generated by gas. It's obviously got very little land for farming compared with us. And crucially, back in December 2020, they were the first country in the world to approve lab-grown meat. You know, cellular agriculture, stem cells. So they are pushing down a completely different route on food compared with us. And we're in a different space on energy and everything else. Then on top of that, part of the agreement with the Prime Minister signed off there was a new sustainable aviation agreement. And there's some, you know, nice expressions of what they would like to happen. But we're beyond expressions at this point. That there should have been big projects agreed, not just say, oh, let's do something on hydrogen or let's do something on sustainable aviation fuels. Because there are countries like the UK that are building 14 sustainable aviation fuel plants at a price of $1 billion each. And Singapore has that capability, thanks to a Finnish company, Neste. Has got a big refinery in Singapore. But I was really disappointed that the sustainable agreement and this overall climate and green economy pillar was so vague. And then, last thing, sorry, I give you lots of stats, but one last thing. There was a very small business delegation with the Prime Minister, only 13 people. I think that's very disappointing. I would love to know why Sophie went with her. I think that's important. We were not playing our best hand in business to business in Singapore, and I think that's a great shame. I think that's kind of misfired on this trip.
Broadly, now that we are going to be seeing the Prime Minister take more international trips, what are you expecting we might see from this point onwards, particularly as you mentioned with climate change now being, I think, firmly on people's political agenda? It's been a long time trying to get it into that space, and whether it's there in a sort of greenwashed way or whether it's there in a genuine way is still a little bit up for debate. But what do you think we're going to see perhaps in the rest of the year or the next few months from the Prime Minister's international trips? Is there anything that you're thinking this would be good to see her at, or we should be having a representative at on the sort of calendar?
She should be at COP27 in Egypt in November. It's great saying that she wasn't in Glasgow last November. That would be a very major thing. But she's got to go with something really concrete. And May 31st, we'll get the emissions reduction plan from the government, which is kind of its overarching strategy for reducing emissions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not feeling particularly positive about how big and bold that's going to be, but we'll wait and see. I think it's really important for her to be out there on the world stage with big, concrete things that she and her government and the people here are really committed to. Because I think it's when you're out there in the world, working with others and making those big commitments, that you encourage each other to move on climate. And so that's why I think it's really important she is out there, but she's got to go with big projects, not just this sort of nice-to-have sort of agreement we've just got out of Singapore.
Mm. Well, thank you very much for your time this morning, Rod Oram. There's lots to think about there and really appreciate your thoughts on it. We'll talk to you again very soon and hope you have a lovely rest of your week.
Thanks, Rachel. See ya.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
with Rod.